executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN Studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. And we have a fun show for you guys on tap. Make sure to tweet at us at VSiN Live on Twitter, at MLombardi NFL is where you can find Michael, at Femi Abebefe is where you can find me. A lot of fun over the weekend, Michael. We have NFL preseason week one games to react to. I actually saw DraftKings is starting to populate the week two numbers. So preseason, we're here, man. We're rolling along each and every week. Game starting up coming up Thursday. But how you doing today?
I'm doing great. We're in the routine. We got games to watch. You can go through it. You can kind of make some assumptions. Not too many, Femi. We don't want to get carried away here. I know we do that. We have a tendency to do that. But it's all good. But, you know, we didn't even congratulate Stormy, who we miss, who got married on Saturday. Yes. I mean, I feel really bad about that. You know, congratulations to Stormy and her husband. And, you know, hopefully everything went well. I didn't hear any details. Stephanie, I'm sure, will tell us tomorrow. But I didn't hear any details of the wedding. So I'm assuming everything went to plan.
Yeah, I'm assuming so. I was not there. I'm assuming that everything went to plan there. Congratulations once again to Stormy. That's why I'm here on a Monday, on this Overreaction Monday, because Stormy typically in this spot right now. So hopefully they're off to the honeymoon doing that thing and get a nice little time off before football season starts.
No question. There's a lot to do.
A lot to do here. And we have a lot to do on the show over these next 2 hours, starting in 45 minutes. Mike Triplett, who covers the Saints for NewOrleans.football, will be joining us. We'll talk New Orleans Saints. That offense looked pretty good in the first half. Could we be sleeping on Derek Carr, Dennis Allen, and this Saints attack? We'll ask Mike Triplett 45 minutes from now. 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific. Mike Pritchard, VSiN NFL analyst, played nearly a decade in the National Football League, former first-round pick. He will join us to give his thoughts on what we saw in week one of the preseason and what we can carry over into week two of the preseason, and also, more importantly, the regular season, which is now less than a month away. But, Michael, we have to react to what we saw here down the street from the Circa Resort and Casino over at Allegiant Stadium on the Strip in the afternoon. The Las Vegas Raiders and the San Francisco 49ers. The result of the game is not really relevant here, but how the offenses looked and how Trey Lance, more importantly, looked there for the Niners, which was a shaky start despite what the box score really showed.
Shaky start. How about the ending? I mean, you know, that was kind of hard to do. I said this yesterday on the air before the game, that there was no chance he's going to be the number two quarterback, and I'll double down on that. I'll double down on that. And I feel bad. I'm not taking shots at the kid. Yeah. It's just, it's unfortunately, no, he's not in the rhythm. You know, it's just not there. And I think one of the reasons why instinctively it just doesn't come, and when you watch Aiden O'Connell for the Raiders, and I'm not ready to put him in the Hall of Fame either, but you saw a system and he was executing and he fit within and he had great poise and he had great anticipation. I thought the Raiders' execution was really good. I thought that, to me, was the story of the game. What you're looking for in these preseason games is the ability to execute. You know, Jacksonville's execution was really good. You know, when you watch these games unfold, that's what you want to see. You want to see the offensive line playing well. The Raiders' line played well. You want to see the quarterback handle the situation and throw the ball, and then the receiver shockingly catch the ball and advance it. So I think that's what we saw from the Raiders' offense, and it's encouraging. They played a lot of their backups in the offensive line, and they looked a lot better in this game than they did last year.
Well, I asked you right as we were ending the show yesterday, is Trey Lance true or false playing for a roster spot? Now, we've seen the game from yesterday. He didn't look good. In fact, he probably should have thrown two interceptions. Both of them dropped, one of them being dropped and right into the hands of Ross Dwelly there for a touchdown, which I had never seen anything like that before. on a turnover-worthy touchdown is what we're going to go ahead and deem that
one.
Well,
he had 111 quarterback rating. Calm down now. He had 111 quarterback rating. Let's understand that. That's Sorry. Important.
But like, do you think that his roster spot is on the line, just to kind of pay off what I asked you yesterday to close out the show?
No. It can't be, Femi. You know, it costs 20. I think it'll cost 10 million. He has so much money and guaranteed over the next 2 years, they can't afford to cut him. I mean, they should, because they need to give his money to Bosa, but they can't because of this. This is, you know, this is a problem that gets into when you blow a pick, the third pick overall in the draft, and it doesn't come to fruition, you know, because of the salary cap and because they can't really get anything out of him. He's going to have to be the third string quarterback. Look, I think what was clear in the game was, if it goes the way you practice it, Lance may be effective. If it changes or alters pre-snap or during snap, then it becomes a real issue. They're stuck with him for two more years. He's got guarantees next year, Femi. Who's going to take those guarantees off their hands? Like, who's running in line to put their hand up and say, oh, please, please, can we pay him? Nobody. Everybody's sitting back saying, you know, we liked him coming out, but we didn't like him as much as you did.
Well, that's what I'm so, like, kind of dumbfounded on, is that clearly Adam Peters, John Lynch, that 49ers brass liked him a lot. You reported that Kyle Shanahan wanted Mac Jones. How did, like, what did Peters and Lynch see when those, a season and one game of Trey Lance at North Dakota State? Because he only played that one game during the 2020 season because the FCS teams had to play in the springtime. But even in 2019, the way he was used at North Dakota State, like, what did they see in that to say, we need to go ahead and not just take him with our first round pick, move up into the draft and use a ton of resources to go ahead and select this guy?
Well, what they saw is where we all make mistakes. They saw a big player who was fast and had a great arm. And they took and they missed the instinctive part. Had Bill Walsh been in the building, he would have never said, let's take Lance. There's no way. That was everything against what he believed in. I'm sure if you gave Mike Shanahan, Kyle's father, truth serum, he would have not said that. He would have said exactly the same thing. You know, look at the quarter. Look at Trey Lance and look at Kirk Cousins. Look at Trey Lance and look at RG3. Who did the Shanahans want in Washington? They wanted Kirk Cousins. Daniel Snyder, the former owner, who was also the former head scout and general manager, he wanted RG3. Who did they pick? So past performance of history of what you like determines the future. That's why it made really no sense. Now, what the rhetoric that came out of San Francisco was, the reason they liked Lance is because he can enhance the offense. That is, Kyle's offense was getting stale. It didn't look stale last year, by the way, but it was getting stale, and they needed someone to come in to add more dimensions to the offense. That's just a bunch of crap. That was just a lie. It's like the Warren Commission will just make something up to fit the case. So, you know, I think ultimately this is where they are, and they're going to have to deal with it moving forward. It's unfortunate. You feel bad for Lance because it's not his fault. He's trying. It's just not there. Darnold wasn't much better, but he played in the second half with a lot of the backups. He had a great throw down the nine route. He missed some easy throws. I thought Rich Gannon said it really well. You know, what happens to Darnold, what happens to Mayfield, what happens to some of these guys that are the lower tier is they make the easy play hard. If you're going to throw the hitch out there, throw the hitch, and you got to hit that. It's against air. There's nobody there. When you make that a hard completion, then all of a sudden things break down.
Well, that's why, from the betting perspective, like, this 49ers team really interests me because the uncertainty at quarterback, because even with as good as Brock Purdy looked last year, it was only about six games or so. Like, it's hard to really have complete faith that, oh, this team should be 10-1 to win the Super Bowl or whatever they are right now, 10-1 to win the Super Bowl, 4-1 to win the conference, minus 165 to win the NFC West with a win total of 10.5. That is reserved for teams typically that have established quarterbacks at play. We already know Lance is not going to be the guy. Darnold, I'm curious to see what he looks like if he gets reps with the first team or at least reps in the first half, if he can look really good. And Purdy, while looked good last year, it was just six games like I mentioned. So are you a little bit skeptical of this Niners team, even though they do have the backing of the market here to go out and do big things?
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical. Well, remember, the market on the 49ers team went from, I think, 11.5 down to 10.5.
Yeah, there were people that bet the under.
I mean, it opened at 11.5, and everybody jumped off, and then all of a sudden it moved to 10.5. I'm a little worried. Look, I think Purdy was great. I think he played really well for the last pick in the draft. He really was good. However, you know, he has to play that way another year. And teams, one thing we know, teams get a sense of who you are and how you play. And if you can't ratify that, if you don't change your game and all of a sudden, you know, you could sit, there's no way you could sit there and say, okay, when we play Patrick Mahomes, if we just do this, we'll slow him down. That rhetoric doesn't exist. Same thing with Justin Herbert. That rhetoric doesn't exist. Whereas for Tua, you know, if we pressure Tua inside and make him have to see over there. Okay, there's what you have to do. So once games get played, you start to come up with a theory on how to play the player. And when there's no theory, like with Herbert, like Burrow, how do you play Burrow? Okay, hard to do. He's good in the pocket. But Kyler Murray, keep him in the pocket. You see what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know this on Purdy yet. That's the thing. We don't really know who Purdy is. We haven't seen enough of him.
Yeah. And I know, Michael, you always make fun of me for having my screens, and sometimes I have a baseball game up. But I'll use a little bit of a baseball analogy here, Michael, to kind of like put the bow on what you're saying. It's almost like when a rookie star player gets called up from the minor leagues, and it's the pitchers are starting to get adjusted. They say, okay, like, how do I pitch to this guy? Oh, I shouldn't pitch him here because he's going to take me deep.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden they realize, oh, he's susceptible to off speed, or he's susceptible to a slider down and in. And then they kind of figure it out. And then that player has to make that other adjustment to prove that they're actually a really good player.
Correct. Yeah, that you hit the nail on. That's a perfect analogy, Femi. It is. And that's what quarterbacks happen. That's why we'll see a spike of a young quarterback, and then all of a sudden there's no maintenance of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't continue to see. Everybody thinks once we see a spike, we're going to get another spike.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield, you know, he's in the – but when you watch Baker Mayfield in the Chief game, he's down 22-16. He's got a chance with 4 minutes to go in the game to win that game. Couldn't make the plays. Right? The next year, people defended him differently.
Yeah. No, it's the progression is not linear. There's peaks and valleys, and hopefully the guy can get out of the valleys and then become the player that you hope that he becomes. But we'll talk more about this on the other side as well and get to the other reactions from around the preseason. This is the Lombardi Line rolling along here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. We are presented by BetMGM. You know, before we talk about this Chiefs-Saints game, Michael, the point that you brought up about how bettors and sharp bettors have been betting the under on the San Francisco 49ers all throughout this offseason. That win total opened 11.5, now down to 10.5. And which coincides with that is that we've seen the Seattle Seahawks get bet quite a bit to win that division. Maybe people thinking that these teams are actually closer together than what we saw a year ago, where San Fran was sort of the head honcho in that NFC West. Maybe this is actually a pretty competitive deal between Seattle and San Francisco.
Well, I think a lot of the betting on the under on San Francisco started with the uncertainty of Purdy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Purdy going to throw? Is Purdy going to be able to play? I think the sharp market really was never counting on Trey Lance becoming a good player. Even though Trey Lance's MVP odds are 50-1, he has the same MVP odds as Brock Purdy does. How that is, I have no idea.
Yeah, one guy's the starter,
Well, one guy, I mean, he's the most, every time I go to my timeline, he's on it all the time. I mean, people just want him to be good. So I think that movement, but I think I was thinking the movement was because of Purdy's elbow. But I do think what you said about Purdy is true. I think there's a little bit of uncertainty. Can he continue to do that? Mm-hmm. Can he handle the slider? Can he handle the changeup? Like how people approach him and how they play them. I think that's probably the modus operandi on why. And then when you watch Seattle, look, that you know, I thought their energy level in Seattle, you know, it was kind of a different game. But Seattle's a good team,
mm-hmm.
And Jigba's going to help them. You know, and Charbonnet was out there running the football. He's going to help them when
Runs
they get
hard.
Kenneth Walker back. And I think they'll be improved on defense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like the betting market, it's very hard to convince the betting market that you're for real. Like, it's if you play well initially, they're like, okay, we'll prove it again. And I think that's what's happening with the Niners here, especially as it pertains to Brock Purdy. We did see New Orleans Saints, yesterday play really well against the Kansas City Chiefs. That first team offense, even the second team offense led by Jameis Winston, they both went down the field and drove it into the end zone for touchdowns. What'd you make of New Orleans? We're going to talk with Mike Triplett of NewOrleans.football later on today, but what'd you make of the Saints offense and their execution yesterday?
Oh, I thought they were really good, right? I mean, there's no way to deny it. I think that they moved the ball at ease against them. And look, let's face it, it isn't that the Chiefs didn't put their starting guys out there. McDuffie was out there. Watson was out there at corner. Willie Gay, Nick Bolton played, right? Mm-hmm. Karlaftis, their first-round draft pick, was playing. So they had their guys out there. They just couldn't really handle the offensive line of New Orleans. I think finally with Penning at left tackle really helped out. So Carr looked good, and then they put in Winston, and he looked good. So, and they ran Kamara. So their execution was really good. And so to me, they're a team that you say, okay, week one, really good execution. Really good execution. And on Kansas City side, even, Kelce started, Sky Moore, Scantling started, Mahomes started, Hilaire, their execution wasn't there. Now, obviously, that's more to work on for Andy Reid, and we'll see how that works out. But we know they'll be good. They just weren't. They weren't in rhythm on that drive. They weren't in rhythm in that game when they started it out. And, sometimes you are and sometimes you're not. And, they had six plays, and then they punted. And they went nine plays in the first quarter and basically gained 31 yards.
Here's what I'll say about the Saints, and we'll have this conversation with Mike Triplett coming up 30 minutes from now, but I am not a believer in Dennis Allen as a head coach. I'm not a believer in Derek Carr as a quarterback, but I do like a lot of the pieces that they have on that roster. It's still a pretty talented roster, and I ask myself, is that are we sort of forgetting about the Saints? Are we sleeping on them? Because I kind of wanted to fade them, and I'm hoping that it just wasn't my bias creeping in. All right, I want to fade the Saints this year. Let me find a team to do it with. Maybe they just win that division. It's kind of an underwhelming division, in my opinion, but maybe they just win it because they do have a lot of good players, even though I have question marks at head coach and quarterback, which are the two most important positions on the team.
Right. Well, the head coach can call defense. So,
yeah, he can.
Pete Carmichael's going to run the offense like he always has. And if they don't, if Carr is protected, Carr can execute. We've seen Carr put great numbers up, right? Mm-hmm. Now, last year, for whatever reason, his accuracy fell off the charts, and he really missed a lot of critical throws, and when the play broke down, he wasn't there. I thought where they are at camp right now is you need to consider them. They're really good.
Yeah.
Their execution was good. Now, that's not to get carried away with it. Carolina's execution wasn't very good. So, I think Atlanta's execution wasn't very good. Miami's execution, that game wasn't a pretty game to watch in terms of the execution. But it's the first game. And I don't think you can rush to judgment that this team's really good or this team's really bad. I think you got to have to blend it in. The Raiders were good, but we'll learn more about the Raiders this week when they practice against the Rams and they go against those guys and see how that works out.
You mentioned the Carolina Panthers. Let's go there with our rookie report, and we will start with Bryce Young, who in three drives, 4 of 6, 21 yards, he was sacked and he was hit a number of other times. What did you make of the number one overall pick's preseason debut?
Well, I thought it was malpractice on Frank Wright's part to leave him in the game. I thought he was getting the crap beat out of him, and I didn't think he needed to be in there. Like, they couldn't block the Jets back up front. They couldn't block Solomon Thomas. They couldn't block those guys. And I felt like I was watching a different game than Frank Wright was watching. Like, get him out of there. Like, why are we doing this? If I were the owner of the team, I would be really upset. Like, what point are we trying to prove here? It was really disheartening. And look, that offensive line was the line that they had last year. And they struggled to block. They struggled to block the front of the Jets, and the Jets did what they wanted to do to them. So right now, Carolina's got a lot of work in front of them. It worries you because Frank Wright's team last year, they don't start fast, and their offensive line from the time he took over to when he left, it was a really good line. It got worse. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, it got worse every step of the way, and that was a line that was highly regarded heading into last season. I love that Colts team heading into last season because of the offensive line, and they played poor. They were one of the worst offensive lines in all of football. C.J. Stroud, we talked about him on Friday. We didn't get your thoughts on this over the weekend. 2 of 4, 13 yards, an interception, a sack. Looked a little bit hurried, didn't look as comfortable as you would hope, but it's just one game, but what did you make of Stroud's performance on Thursday night for the Texans?
Well, you take I mean, take the first play of the game, right? They're going to try to throw the out to the left side, to his right side. He's under center. He's got to throw the out to his left. It's wide open. He don't throw it. He holds the ball and gets sacked. You know, and then the interception, he stares down the inside receiver, which brings the safety, Jalen Mills, over to the receiver, and it's a pick. So it was really not a very good start for C.J. Stroud. It was disappointing. But once again, it was the first start. I thought Houston's defensive front was really, really good. I mean, they got after the New England Patriots' offensive line. They really created. They gained the line of scrimmage. New England's offensive line was way too soft in the game, and they got pushed around and beaten up, which made it really hard for Bailey Zappe to get going. But Stroud's got a long way to go. The best quarterback on the team was Case Keenum by far.
Yeah, Keenum was cooking, man. That was one of my few winning bets over the preseason. It wasn't a good weekend for me betting the preseason games, but shout out to Case Keenum. Maybe we'll go back to well with the Texans if he continues to get those second half reps. Anthony Richardson had moments where he showed that he was the electric player that was picked fourth overall. He had moments that were not so good on the first drive with the interception there. 7 of 12, though, 67 yards, that one pick, but he had 2 carries, 7 rushing yards. Richardson, your thoughts on him in his preseason debut?
I thought Richardson was, you know, I was expecting a little bit of Lamar Jackson's quickness, his run ability. And what I thought I saw was more of a Josh Allen style body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big, physical, going to be hard to tackle when he gets going. Look, it's going to be a work in progress, right? We all know that Anthony Richardson needed more years at school, but he was the fourth pick overall, so why stay in school? It's going to take time. But he's a big body. I think he's got to be really careful because he's going to be a power runner. He's not going to just be a dancer and elusive back. He's going to be a power runner. And he's going to take some hits, and they've got to do a good job of protecting him in that area. So, look, I think it's next week. See how he grows. See what he can learn. What we want to see is from week one to week two, is there any progress, right?
Yeah.
That's why we call it practice. We got to have progress from week one to week two.
Yeah, and week one, it didn't need to be perfect, and it's never going to look perfect with these young guys. Richardson did say, told reporters early at training camp, he added 8 to 12 pounds. So he's definitely getting his body geared up to kind of take on some of that punishment of being a power runner there. He's going to be about 10 pounds heavier than he played at Florida. And you can see it when you watch the game. It's like, holy Lord, this kid is big. Like, it looks like a defensive end out there at 6'5", yeah. 250 pounds. It's like, my God, the guys who are trying to tackle him, none of them are going to be his size unless it's a defensive tackle. So, we'll get more on this rookie report on the other side. I want to ask you about Will Levis. We saw him Saturday afternoon when the Titans took on the Bears. And maybe some updated thoughts on Offensive Rookie of the Year after 1 week of preseason play. We'll continue our preseason discussion on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's football season, and bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSiN, and now is the time to become a VSiN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and NFL guides. Only VSiN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Sign up today for $199. You'll receive both guides as full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl. Or join us for $19 for your first month and see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. We are presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. 15 minutes from now, Mike Triplett will be joining us from NewOrleans.football. A Saints reporter, been covering that team for quite a long time, so we'll get his thoughts on what's happening with this New Orleans Saints team and his reaction to what we saw yesterday with that offense looking pretty good. Execution was A+ for New Orleans. We do have the news out of college football, though, Michael, and we'll talk more about this in hour number two, but we just want to let folks know that we are aware of it. The preseason AP Top 25 has been released. Georgia, the two-time defending national champions, are the number one ranked team heading into the season. Michigan at number two, Ohio State 3, Alabama 4, LSU at number 5. That is the top 5. We'll talk about this top 25 a little bit more in depth coming up in hour number 2 and the betting takeaway from that as well. But just wanted to point that out, Michael, is that, hey, Georgia's back on top. The top dog is at the top of the AP 25.
No question. Yeah, I mean, interesting list. Tennessee's higher than I thought they were going to be, especially with the, with Joe Milton coming in.
Yeah,
are they sure he's good? So I mean, Alabama, too. I mean, you know, they've got questions at quarterback, but I think Alabama is going to be much improved defensively. I really believe that Alabama will be a better team defensively than they were. Last year was unacceptable in terms of how they play defense.
Well, get this. Alabama, Michael, is outside the top three for the first time since 2009 in the AP preseason top 25.
I think probably that I would say Nick Saban would enjoy that.
Uh-huh.
Because it gives you a chance. It gives you a chance to get reality, right? Yeah. Nobody's ever won the pre. I mean, where was Texas A&M last year?
Top 10, I think.
Yeah, of course they were.
They were top 10 for sure. But yeah, no, that's Nick Saban always talks about we got to avoid the rat poison and all that stuff. This is like the opposite of the rat poison. This is the motivation. This is the, hey, we're going to hang. Like, people don't believe. They think we've taken a step back and Georgia's better than us now. This is what Nick Saban needs as they head into summer camp. I'm sure he's very excited to see this news, Alabama being now the number four team preseason. But let's continue, though, our preseason discussion there in the NFL. We saw Will Levis Saturday. Levis was a guy that people thought was going to go in the first round. You always mentioned, hey, this is, I believe, a 5'9 player on the grading scale, I believe was what Will Levis's grade was, that he's not a first-round guy. He's outside. He ends up going in the second round. Had some positives, had some negatives in his debut in the preseason, I thought. 9 of 14, 85 yards, took four sacks and an interception there. But Will Levis as the pick there for the Tennessee Titans, their day two guy. What did you make of him yesterday in Chicago?
Well, I mean, I don't think he looked comfortable, and he played behind the second team line. So I think that kind of affected him a little bit. Willis had better rhythm to him in the game. I mean, again, you're looking for quarterbacks' rhythm, confidence, you know, how it goes. What worries you a little bit is because you're getting ready to play Chicago, which it's really not a hard defense to get ready for. You know, it's going to be cover three, cover one. You know, rarely do they split safety. So it should be easy throws, recognition at the line. Got sacked too much. Again, it's a work in progress. I don't think you can draw anything from it, positively or negative. I think the guys who play good don't overreact. The guys who play poorly don't overreact, especially in the rookies. To me, the veterans are where the most concern shows up, right? Because a veteran should have a feel for it. Okay, I'm getting ready. You know, we just practiced against the Raiders. I'm getting ready to play the Raiders. All right, we practiced against them. Here's what we're going to do. We kind of know them. And yet that doesn't, and if it doesn't work, then you've got issues and you've got to handle that. Like, for example, Sean Clifford. I thought he was outstanding. I thought Sean Clifford was really good. I thought Jordan Love was good. I wouldn't say he was great. But what I learned more from watching the Green Bay game was the fact that Green Bay is going to change and modify a lot of bootlegs, a lot of nakeds, trying to get him out on the edge a little bit because they didn't want to do that with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers doesn't like that part of the LaFleur offense, which was the Sean McVay offense. So with those two backs, their ability to run the ball, the strong side zone play, and then come off bootlegs to the backside will make the game a little easier for Love. I thought it was. I thought he looked that he had command. His touchdown pass was excellent. You know, he had great timing on it. So, again, this will be a good week. Now, New England comes to town, I think, tomorrow or Wednesday to practice against them. So that'll be great work for them.
Yeah, no, that's the joint practice, I think, are really cool because, like you said, you see, hey, we can take practice and then we can apply it to the game, see who's taking to the coaching, who's able to execute game plans, and who's able to kind of handle the workload and all that stuff. And it gives teams a really good feel for that. And also then we get the good on good as well during the joint practice. We don't see them during the actual games because guys don't want to play in the preseason or teams don't want to have guys risk injury in the preseason, but we at least get a snippet of it with the joint practices. We do have more stuff in our rookie reports here, Michael. And I wanted to kind of highlight Aiden O'Connell because he was really impressive yesterday in his start. Played, I believe, the entire game almost. 15 of 18, 141 passing yards, a passing touchdown. I was actually looking at his odds to win Offensive Rookie of the Year over at DraftKings. He is 100-1, clearly because he is not expected to be the starting quarterback, and the only way he'd get onto the field is if Garoppolo got injured or just played absolutely poorly. But what did you make of O'Connell there? A lot of people are buzzing about him, myself included. I was really impressed in this debut for him.
Well, I thought he was really, you know, he was prepared. You know, the game didn't look too big for him, right? So he was able to come in and execute the offense, which is not an easy offense to execute, right? It's very complex, and it requires a lot of things on the quarterback. For example, you know, when Jimmy Garoppolo was in San Francisco, he wasn't in charge of the mic call. He wasn't in charge of certain things. At Oakland and in in Las Vegas and in New England, that's all on the quarterback. I mean, the quarterback has to get the run game, point the mics out. You know, it's one of the things that affects the game. You've got to be really in tune. So it's a big, big jump for me for any young player to come in and play as effectively as he did. So he's smart. He knows what to do. He understood how to play the game. And, you know, I thought he executed. He made some good throws. I was more impressed with the Raiders' offensive line, which to me they didn't get a chance to draft anyone this year, and they played some guys. They're going to have to rely on some of these younger players that they accumulated last year to see if they can hold up. And, you know, they did a really nice job against the backups of the 49ers.
If O'Connell continues to play this well throughout the rest of the preseason, is he the solidified QB2 for the Raiders? I think right now Brian Hoyer, I believe, is the QB2 on the depth chart, but O'Connell would surpass him. Is that safe to say?
I don't know if he would surpass him, but I certainly think he would give them a chance to feel like, look, you know, he's going to have some growing pains, but it gives them a chance to have somebody that they'd like to work with. He has one of the things you want when you're looking at these young quarterbacks, whether it's Sean Clifford or Aiden O'Connell, is you want to see if they have starter traits, right? Do they have starter traits? Do they have enough arm? Do they have enough size? Do they have enough of everything to be a starter? Okay? And now, that doesn't mean they're going to be a starter. But that just means they have traits. Traits. That's the key word. So I think that that's the positive part after 1 week. Now, we've got to get 2 weeks. I mean, next week, they left after the game. The Raiders did. They flew down to Los Angeles, and they'll practice against the Rams for the next 3 days, which, again, will give O'Connell an opportunity to have more reps against other teams, more this time to, you know, have the ability to make decisions and process, right? What's Trey Lance's problem? Don't process quick enough. His feet and his arm aren't linked together. What made O'Connell good? His feet and his arm were linked. What made Clifford good? His feet and his arm were linked together. That's what you're looking for.
O'Connell, 100-1 Offensive Rookie of the Year. Is that a St. Jude's pick, or is there something to that?
Yeah. Come on. Yeah, come on.
I just want to make it clear.
Look, if you hit that one, who could predict, A, is he going to play? I mean, and B, you know, I mean, that means the Raiders are really going to have to win. I think the Raiders are improved. Now, when I say they're improved, do I think they're going to win 12 games? I'm not saying that. I think they're improved in the sense of they have the ability to be better than they were last year. Are they a play? I think this whole, the thing that hurts the Raiders more than anything is this illusion that they were a playoff team that was so close to beating Cincinnati. That wasn't a good team. They just happened to be in that game.
Yeah.
I think because now they got to get Tyree Wilson, their first-round pick, back. They've got to get him out there. He's not been on the field yet. They say he will be. We'll see.
Yeah. I just wanted to make it clear on the O'Connell Rookie of the Year thing, because I think a lot of people, they always remember back in 2016 when Tony Romo was the quarterback, was susceptible to injury, he got hurt, and then we saw Dak Prescott take off and win Offensive Rookie of the Year. But it's just because it's happened before doesn't mean it has to happen again. And right now it's also priced in. I think Prescott, I believe, was like 250 or 300-1 that year to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And it's like you caught lightning in a bottle if you bet Dak Prescott that year. But to expect it again and at a worse price, going a little bit too far. But O'Connell, he has a fan in me. I'll say that. Mike Triplett on the other side, New Orleans.football, coming up here to talk Saints on the Lombardi Line. We are presented by BetMGM.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any MLB game, and if all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back in bonus bets up to $25. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 plus to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. U.S. promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, D.C., Nevada, New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in most states. This is the Lombardi Line. We are presented by BetMGM. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. And joining us now, our first guest on the program, to talk a little New Orleans Saints football. You can check him out, Saints Reporter at neworleans.football. Has done a number of years covering the Saints. He is the one and only Mike Triplett joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Mike, we appreciate you taking the time to join us today. And I just want to get kind of a 10,000-foot view from you on this New Orleans Saints team, because it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the vibe about this team nationally, it almost is as if they are the kind of the forgotten favorite. And after what we saw yesterday, it feels like, hey, maybe we should be taking more consideration that this Saints team can actually live up to winning an NFC South title with Dennis Allen and Derek Carr.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I think it's true for a number of reasons. One being they're the only team in the NFC South that's not rebuilding right now. And so how big of favorites they should be in the division probably depends on how quickly you think Atlanta or Carolina or whatever, wherever exactly Tampa Bay is in that process, if any of them could be contenders this year. But there's probably also a little boy who cried wolf with the Saints. I mean, this team, this is probably going to be the third year in a row where I've picked them to go 10-7. Maybe one of those years I picked them to win 11 games, but health has been their biggest issue. I mean, they still have the same stars that they've had. They're getting a little older now. Cam Jordan and DeMario Davis on defense, along with the younger Marshawn Lattimore and, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, one of the best offensive lines in the league when healthy. But they just, they've been one of the worst injury teams in the league the last couple of years. Michael Thomas hasn't played. Marshawn Lattimore missed half the season. Jameis Winston got hurt. The offensive line's been getting hurt. So if those guys stay healthy, this is a legit great team. That's what we saw on display in that first game. That opening drive is a really, really loaded offense, a loaded offensive line, loaded with skilled position players, and Derek Carr looks like the guy who can make them go. So if they can just have average or above average health, this should be a team no one's sleeping on. But that's a big if for this team, and they're a little older and they're a little thin.
I agree with everything you said, Mike. I think that this is a talented team that has had a hard time staying healthy. So, and one of those players, Michael Thomas, has really had a hard time staying healthy. Where do you see him as you remember him when he was leading the league in receptions? How do you relate him to then to now?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there's cautious optimism. I mean, anything they can get out of Michael Thomas is going to be a huge bonus. Chris Olave has wide receiver one potential. So if Michael Thomas comes back and is quote-unquote just a wide receiver two, that's okay. If he's a wide receiver one and Chris Olave is a wide receiver two, then that's spectacular, obviously. But just have him on the field. Have defenses have to pay attention to him. Have a guy to throw contested catches to in the red zone and third downs. They missed that last year. Anything they get from him would be tremendous. I obviously, we cannot predict that he'll look like he looked in 2019. He's missed 2.5 seasons now. He's 30 years old now. Last year in training camp and the preseason, I think we were getting very, very excited by what we saw. I think he looked like he had not missed a beat. This year, I think we're seeing a little more rust, a little more time to get back to speed. But the good thing is we're seeing him on the field every day in practice, and then we saw it on that opening drive, a 16-yard catch, where it looked like him and Derek Carr were on the exact same page about where to turn the route and thrown to a place where he could get to it, and he got to it. If he's on the field, he's going to be an impact player. That it's undeniable with him.
We're speaking with Mike Triplett here, Saints reporter for neworleans.football. Derek Carr spent a lot of time out here in Las Vegas and also in Oakland playing for the Oakland Raiders, then now the Las Vegas Raiders. But what's he been like throughout the offseason now that we're in training camp? Has training camp looked like what we saw yesterday afternoon? Is that sort of what's been going on? Is he taking to this Pete Carmichael offense here? How are those two kind of meshing?
Yeah. It really has. I mean, we were just talking about this on our show after the game, how we keep coming on our podcast and our show and saying just how smooth everything looks. And that's a hard, a hard thing to quantify. What does that mean that everything looks smooth? And then you saw it. I was glad everyone got to see it. I mean, the offense just operated efficiently. He makes good reads in this offense. He has good timing and chemistry with the receivers. The offensive line, when the five guys are out there, gives him time to operate. And yeah, Derek Carr, we know what we sort of know what Derek Carr is. I mean, I think there's potential for him to be ranked higher in the top 10 when he hits his ceiling, and closer to 15 when he has a down year. But we all know that tier he's in. I mean, I kind of think of what Kirk Cousins did for the Vikings, what Ryan Tannehill did for the Titans. That's what the Saints were looking for, and I think he's going to be perfect to operate this offense. I mean, Pete Carmichael loves giving a quarterback 2 to 3 plays at the line of scrimmage and saying, get us into the right play based on what you see from the defense. That's what Derek Carr loves to do and didn't really get the chance to do as much last year. So Derek Carr got to do a lot under John Gruden when he had the four best seasons of his career. So if he can operate the offense smoothly, make the right decisions, get to the right play calls, and he's got playmakers like Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, Alvin Kamara, Juwan Johnson, et cetera, out there, I think the offense can really be revived, and that's something that this offense has needed the last couple of years.
Mike, where do you think they are at corner? If you look at their depth chart, assuming Lattimore is healthy, like, where do you feel like they are at the corner? Are they good enough at corner to handle the really good passing games of the NFC?
Yeah, they have depth and options there. There are a few positions where I am concerned about their depth, but corner is not one of them. Corner and safety, both. The secondary is really loaded with talent. Now, Marshon Lattimore is the best player on the team. We actually did a ranking this offseason during the quiet summer months where we ranked him as the best player on the team, and then he's been the best player in camp. He just, you know, I think he looks poised to sort of be recognized in that first tier of, you know, top five cornerback conversations. When healthy, that's the kind of player he's been. So you feel great about that. And then there's a really interesting battle for the number two job. Paulson Adebo, who was really good as a rookie 2 years ago. Alante Taylor, who showed flashes as a rookie last year. The first guy's a third-round pick. Second guy's a second-round pick. They're kind of in a neck-and-neck battle. I think Paulson Adebo's slightly ahead right now, but there's still time for that to change. They've got a veteran in Bradley Roby who's currently in the slot but has a ton of experience on the outside. Then they've even got some you know, former starters like Isaac Yiadom, who's quietly been a good, reliable backup for him. So I really like their depth there and the potential to be more than just solid at those other positions. One of those guys could eventually break out. I think they're hoping to see that from Alante Taylor, their second-round pick from last year. He's still a little bit of a work in progress, but the talent's definitely there.
Mike, we got a couple minutes left, and it sounds like you're sort of high on this Saints team this year, barring health. But at their absolute peak this season, if they're able to stay healthy, are the Saints, in your opinion, closer to the Eagles and the Niners in the NFC, or are they closer to like the Detroit Lions and the Cowboys and like some of those teams that are sort of maybe dark horses and knocking on the door and not quite the favorites?
Yeah, we'd have to see it, and we'd have to see them achieve higher than they've achieved in several years if we're going to put them in that Eagles-Niners tier. But I definitely like them better than certainly the Lions, and in a sense better than the Cowboys and the Giants because of opportunity. If any one of those teams was in the NFC South, they have a chance to be a 2 or 3 seed. You know, I mean, if everything does come together, you know, you're disappointed if you don't win 10, 11 games and have a home playoff game and get into that, 2 or 3 seed mix. So it's a combination of I do like this team, and you know, I mean, I do want to qualify. I don't want to sound too Pollyannish on them. I mean, a Chris Olave injury, a Marshon Lattimore injury, a Cam Jordan injury, a DeMario Davis injury. They're really thin in a lot of positions where they're counting on guys to be on the field. But if they're able to finally do that, have some health luck, I absolutely think it'd be a disappointment if they aren't a 10 or 11 team who's like the 3 seed in the NFC by the nature of being in probably the weakest division. Weak is a tough word, but, you know, most opportunity to win a division.
All right. Lays it out right there. 12-1 right now, the New Orleans Saints to win the NFC.
Great job, maybe Mike. Really appreciate you.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, guys.
Awesome stuff. That is Mike Triplett, Saints reporter for NewOrleans.football there. Maybe just take another look at the New Orleans Saints as a team. I think the betting market has been looking to fade, but maybe not so fast. We'll continue this conversation all throughout the rest of the preseason heading into the regular season. All right, hour number two begins with Step Into My Office here on the Lombardi Line.